Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Rockin' Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts, our SB Nation College Top 10 podcast. We are on Season 5, Episode 31, here to talk about your Missouri Tigers and their basketball program. I am your host, Sam Snelling, with me, as always, for the Plains of Indiana, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
The more often you mention that this is a Top 10 podcast, I just feel like the universe is going to punish you by, like, dropping us to, like, 30th. You've just slowly angered people with your hubris that they've tuned out and we're going to get the next like Excel file and it's going to say Rock'em Nation Podcast 27th. And then you're just going to leave that little laurel out of your spiel when you start the pod. Beware. Like beware.
I do trust that readers at this point, or listeners, I guess I should say, it's the podcast, to know that, like, I include that, like, almost as, like, a little joke at this point. Like, it's...
Sure.
Like, yeah. It's cool that we're in that group, but we're also, like, it's... That list is based on, like, sheer download numbers, and there are other blogs that, like, record a podcast, like, every day. So, I mean...
Those people
I care
are
more
insane.
About our, like, yeah, like I've always cared more about like our per episode listeners and making sure that like we're keeping a steady group of folks that are listening. To those that do, we appreciate. We would like to grow our audience, obviously, but the top 10 stuff is mostly a joke at this point. I just like throwing it in there because it's part of the spiel.
But but we do have actual basketball to talk about.
There were basketball things that happened despite us not recording a podcast last week.
Not things that people may want to hear us talk a lot about, but they happened. So as we respond to news and analyze it, we're almost obligated. Now we are obligated to talk about it. So
it feels like it's been like forever since we've had good, positive, like roster addition news. And earlier, that was just earlier this week. Yeah, on 2 days ago, that felt like a week ago. So as we record on Wednesday, May 11th, Monday, Jamarion Sharp, who was, I guess, the Missouri Tigers' top target in the transfer portal, opted to basically go back to Western Kentucky. A lot of people were surprised by this news. I wasn't shocked. I was a little surprised that maybe it didn't play out a little bit longer. There are still a lot of people in Memphis, a lot of people in Houston, a lot of people in Columbia that were confident they were going to get this kid, all for him to basically turn around and go home. So he's kind of from that area. He grew up not far from Western Kentucky campus. So that saga appears to be over. Matt, what are your thoughts on Mizzou not landing the 7'5" block shot a minute wunderkind from Western Kentucky?
There are two parts of me that respond to the story. The first one is, and I'll just get it out of the way, I'm happy that a school like Western Kentucky is going to hold on to a guy that could arguably make them an NCAA tournament team out of the CUSA. You know, they've got some veterans coming back that they've added. Dante Yallen, a Kentucky transfer, who I think is a really good fit for that level, who I think is going to be a really, really, vital kind of asset as a shooter for them.
He won't have to defend in the SEC, which is a positive.
Yeah, that will help. And
scoring was never his problem.
And they are going to hope to rehabilitate Christian Lander, A former five-star point guard out of Evansville and down in the beard of Indiana. He's actually probably closer to Bowling Green than he is to Bloomington. So they've got some pieces there that I think can elevate that program that, you know, it's never been an issue for Rick Stansbury to get talent to Bowling Green. Maximizing it is probably the bigger issue. But setting that aside, you know, Jamarion Sharpe, you know, has been recruited by Rick since 10th or 11th grade. You know, Rick helped steer him to John A. Logan College, where he met Kyle Smith Peters, now a Missouri assistant. His family is from Hopkinsville, which, as you mentioned, is nearby. Everything on paper there, you want a kid like that to stay in that program and help elevate it and take it to its potential. And this is a case where I think, you know, this is NIL at its best. Bigger programs come in, you know, that community, that fan base rallies, they put together a package to keep him there. A lot like what SLU did with Yuri Collins, and a lot like Detroit did with, you know, Antoine Davis. So in those situations, that's kind of cool. You know, this has been the spring of everyone sort of decrying the end of college sports because of NIL. Well, this is what I think people envisioned NIL doing at its best. And that's helping these guys, you know, really maximize their final 1 or 2 years of college, but stay where they are. So I think it's cool that Jamarion's going to stay and going to, you know, help try and, you know, fulfill that program's potential and what its vision, you know, of success is. Conversely, though, it leaves Missouri in a really, really tight spot because this was a piece that I've been slowly chipping away at an analysis of what this new roster looks like. I've held off publishing it because I wanted to see whether or not they were going to get this keystone in Jamarion Sharpe. And a keystone in the sense of Sharpe is not a high usage guy offensively. He cannot create his own offense. You cannot throw it to him on the block. But he's incredibly mobile. He's a good roller. He's got good hands, improving hands. The difference is he's got to develop some sort of post move for when he catches down there and some sort of ability, maybe out to 5 to 10 feet. That's really raw and, you know, never came around. But you can see all the physical tools there for him to be a really, really good option as a cutter, a roller, and kind of a dump-off guy in the short corner. He just needs some basic post moves that he can rely on to get to a scoring move and sort of punish teams that way if they go on switches against him. When I watch him on tape, you know, for his shot, for his propensity for blocking shots, he doesn't foul a lot. He's not a big foul guy. He only averaged 4.4 fouls per 40 minutes. He's really, really good at trail blocks. He's really good at understanding how to rotate. He understands, you know, when to contest and, you know, when to just play with straight verticality. He'd have been a perfect anchor for the back line of Gates's defensive systems, whether it's man or zone. And that really, I think, would have allowed everybody in front of him to be really, really focused and be aggressive in switches. I think it would have allowed some guys, even like Kobe Brown, to be aggressive in passing lanes because you know you have a guy behind you. Maybe the box score impact's not huge, but his presence and how he sort of exists as a system fit, I think would have really, really elevated Missouri from a team that I think right now is a roster that's probably NIT as a peak to maybe getting an 8 or 9.
Better than they were a year ago,
but you plug Jamarion Sharpe.
Drastically better.
But you plug Jamarion Sharpe in. Now you've got a team that you can start kind of having a discussion about going from 140 in KenPom to getting on the bubble. So that, I think that's just sort of the opportunity missed here. But the trade-off is, you know, a kid gets to stay and do kind of, I think, what most fans, you know, want, which is to not have their program raided. So it's a little bit of a mixed feelings there. But now Mizzou's got to pivot really, really late in the cycle.
And I mean, I'm not entirely sure where they go because, I mean, we pretty diligently tracked the transfer portal. I mean, as best as you can, there's lots of content out there on Twitter, and a lot of the kids, you know, when they're, especially the ones that are maybe transferring up and are getting Power Five interest, they want people to know that, like this is the first time they've really kind of gone through a big time recruiting process. So it tends to be a little more public, but not everybody's like that. And as far as we know, like the board is clear. We tracked everybody that Missouri came in contact with, or at least was announced. And everyone has been marked off, whether that means committed to another school, or cut Missouri from the list.
Or just an initial contact that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. So there's nobody that we know of that's left. And I mean, there's still some intriguing, you know, players out there. I think everyone at this point looks at what the roster has sort of become over the last, you know, few months, and looked at all the players who have been added. And you see, like, a glaring hole at center. You know, Mohamed Diarra is a, you know, more of like that kind of hybrid forward. You know, he is going to have to play the five. You're probably going to have, you know, Ronnie DeGray and Kobe Brown and
Noah Carter.
Even Noah Carter and Aiden Shaw, all kind of splitting time at the five, as it stands right now. So ideally, like, they'd be able to go out and find somebody that's serviceable. You know, I think the idea of maybe landing a guy that's impactful enough to sort of put you in a conversation for the NCAA bubble, basically, you know, walk right back to Bowling Green, Kentucky. So, you know, there were a couple of other guys that Missouri had contacted, but they had, you know, I think F.A.
Abugidi
from Washington State garnered a lot of interest. So, but he cut his list of like 30 schools down to like 15, and Missouri was not one of them. So I don't know if he's cut it any further, but anybody for you that's out there that you think maybe Missouri should take a look at?
I've put it in the piece that we had today that was just sort of a Q&A piece on the site. I'd look at Kudus Wahab, who was at Maryland last year but started his career at Georgetown. Rumors now that he may actually go back to Georgetown. So that may preclude anything else, but that's just, you know, anything that's kind of akin to the Adam Miller chatter. There's nobody reputable that I've seen that's reported that, yes, this is a legit thing. There's just sort of, you know, internet chatter about him going back. But Kudus is more of a traditional five. He's, you know, 6'11", about 250. Not a high-end shot blocker, only a 4.3% block rate. But the guy can absolutely pound the defensive glass. He plays good positional defense. And he can be a low-usage, high-efficiency scorer for you on dump-offs. You can throw the ball into him on post plays. Average roller, you know, not going to, you know, change your life that way. He's not the same kind of, I think, if you watched Jamarion Sharpe, he looked really fluid and comfortable laterally. He can move left to right, up and down, slid his feet really well. You weren't going to, like, put him in a ton of switches, but he was comfortable there. I think Kudus would be a little bit more of a problem if, you know, you asked him to, you know, to slide and play in space. But if you need a guy who's going to give you 40, 50% of minutes, you know, 18 to 24 minutes a night, he could be an option for you. And he's, you know, played three seasons of high major basketball. You know, when he's been in the right situations, he's been pretty efficient. So I think that could be a guy. Washington State had another guy, a four-star borderline five-star guy, Mohamed Gueye, I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly, who went in the portal a couple of weeks ago. Again, West Coast kid, a prolific prep kid out of California. Kyle Smith's kind of made some inroads with that program, which is kind of, I think, near like the Napa Valley region there. But bringing some bigs up to Wazoo, those guys have now gone away from Pullman. But Gueye is kind of a guy in the Abugidi and Sharp model, a little bit more fluid, a little bit more dynamic in space, but there's no real reported connection there. Outside of that, you really, really start to get in to, you know, very, very small options here. There's about 10 guys, if you looked at Bart Torvik's transfer portal, that played at least 40% of minutes at center last year. You know, guys who were sixth, seventh guy or better in their rotation. So it's not a deep pool right now. You know, the question may be, do they pivot back to the JUCO market again and see if they can't get someone and, you know, sort of mine some contacts there? Or do they maybe try and see if they can't hunt down a 2023 kid that, you know, wants to reclass up? But the market is a little bit thin at the post position right now. It's actually probably better on the wing than in the post, but there's not a lot of options that at least jump out off the page, you know, on a cursory glance.
Well, so yeah, you almost wonder if, like, you know, are there any, you know, prep prospects out there? I think you had mentioned in Slack today that didn't sound like they were pursuing any JUCO guys. There were some interesting JUCO prospects that have since committed that we were sort of, you know, tipped off onto, but those guys have gone elsewhere. So we're basically at a point where there's two open scholarships and no real idea on how they're going to get filled. But Gates seems confident that they're going to fill those spots. Somebody's going to be wearing that uniform.
Yeah, I think you got to fill at least one of them. To me, if they had just landed Sharp and, you know, called it a cycle, I'd have been fine with that. Is there great jump shooting on this team right now? No. But there's enough wing depth and enough pieces that sort of fit, I think, Cal Gates wants to play, that you could have overcome that. And there are some ways to kind of hack that problem next year. So I didn't think it was, you know, they weren't going to find, you know, a really, really elite isolation scorer. You know, they didn't necessarily, you know, they could have gotten by without great jump shooting. But I think, you know, a lot of what makes Gates' system work is having, you know, some legit, at least some legit length at that five spot and a mobile five at that who's comfortable in space. Where that guy comes from, I'm not sure. But I think that's sort of the template you want. Diarra, you know, maybe a summer in the weight room and at the training table, you know, gives him 10 or 15 pounds of muscle, but he's still going to need probably 10 or 12 games just to get used to the physicality, speed, pace, all that kind of stuff that normally comes from making the move up. So if you're willing to live with some growing pains right now, you know, maybe you could go get another jump shooter and just say, you know, this is year one. We're going to just try and spackle it together. But there's no obvious solution out there right now, you know, that I think is going to elevate this roster. I say that now, but that I think is going to, you know, have the kind of impact that I think fans were envisioning when Sharp came on the market and then decided to stay put.
Yeah. I think I agree with your sort of assessment. If there were like a few other options out there, at least that we were kind of clued into, then it might be helpful. But, you know, the rest of the, you know, the 2022 recruiting has been pretty quiet. And so, you know, soon enough, we're going to have to start talking about 2023 kids. And I mean, he's already got offers out to 2024, 2025.
The 2025 offers are the most interesting ones because he's making them.
Yeah, those are some young kids. 2025, Matt. yeah, so we will, I mean, obviously, if some more news comes on it, we'll talk about that. I don't really know where else to go talking about, you know, potential guys if we don't really have an idea who they might be looking at. So let's talk about the good news. On Monday, Dennis Gates announced his full coaching staff. And Matt, it's a big one.
It's robust. Hope they have enough office space over there. Who's getting an office? Who's getting a cubicle? That's the question at this point.
So let's run this through real quick. So previously, they had announced Charlton C.Y. Young as the associate head coach. Dickie Nutt and Kyle Smith-Peters as assistants 1 and 2. We knew that Ryan Sharbaugh was going to have some kind of role. Sharbaugh was an assistant coach at Cleveland State. We knew that Matt Klein was on campus and working, so we knew that he was going to have a role. Now we have those roles defined. So Ryan Sharbaugh is going to be the special assistant to the head coach. He was like the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, he was technically, I think, in charge of like teaching and overseeing aspects of Cleveland State's defense. He was on like a lot of these guys had spent some time, I think, as a GA at Florida State, but also has worked for Brian Wardell and kind of come from that coaching tree there. So has some connections in the Midwest and, you know, has worked at Florida State.
So he also named Matt Klein as chief of staff, which I don't think I've ever seen that role defined that way on a basketball staff. A chief of staff for the president basically runs the office, doles out responsibilities, helps set the agenda, executes the vision. So that's Matt Klein. So that's what he's going to do. The director of scouting and analytics, Michael Fly, who was the head coach at Florida Gulf Coast. Florida Gulf Coast has sort of fallen a little bit. Andy Enfield parlayed that job into the USC job. He's since sort of helped build up USC to be a top 25-ish level team the last few years. And then I just forgot the guy's name. Went to East Carolina. Joe Dooley. That's it. Dooley is a former Kansas assistant coach. So he took over from Andy Enfield.
Went to ECU from there.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought you said VCU. So he took the Eastern East Carolina job. And but things have leveled off for Florida Gulf Coast a little bit. And so Fly took over after Dooley left, and you know, things went okay. He didn't do a bad job. He just didn't do as good as, you know, Enfield had done. So FGCU decided to make a move this blast off season, and Michael Fly landed in Columbia as the director of scouting and analytics, which is a pretty substantial hire to make. And having analytics in someone's job title, Matt, did that give you goosebumps just a little bit?
A little bit, but I think then you got to look at the resume of the guy who's in that position. I almost sort of think the scouting might be a little bit more of the emphasis in that title. But I think the bigger thing that stood out to me about that move was that they stashed a former Division I head coach there. Ryan Sharbaugh, was a former Division I assistant. Michael Fly has had time at FSU and then, was a head coach there. So they've essentially use these spots to park two former assistants. So you've basically got five, assistant coaches on staff. Two are just in off-court roles. One's going to probably oversee scouting work, probably maybe advanced scouting work. And if there's an analytics component built into that, great. But, man, this has been sort of a move that a lot of programs have made, which even if you're not having someone who's going to go speak at Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, having another guy who's, just doing the deep dive and doing scouting, whether it's self scouts or, advanced scouts on other teams, it's helpful to have. So that just seeing that they've kind of carved out that space was telling to me.
So Chase Goldstein, director of basketball operations.
We all know what Dobos do.
He had that role.
At Cleveland State.
At Cleveland State. It's you know, it's a lot of organizational stuff. You're you know, booking schedules and stuff like that.
John Connery.
Who's taking over as the director of athletic performance, basically the strength coach, was at Oregon State.
Yep.
Last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dalen King is the scouting coordinator. He had been at Cleveland State for a while, worked with Gates. So he predated Gates getting hired and stuck it out there under Gates. Did a good job enough to get hired as the scouting coordinator at Missouri. And then Perrin Foote, or maybe it's Footy. What do you think?
I'm going to say Foote, but...
Player development coordinator. I like that. I like that title.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the Drew Hamlin of Mizzou now.
But they've... what they've done is, I think, doubled probably the size of the off-court staff. Probably created four new positions here. I mean, there have been player development coordinators before in the org chart. There have been Dobos. Sometimes you have special assistants.
Yeah, so player development coordinator was basically, well, that was Marco Harris's title, or close to it.
Before he was moved before he was moved to the bench.
Yeah.
And promoted to a full-time assistant. But you'll see special assistant to head coaches. You'll see Dobos. You'll see, you know, player development coordinators. And you'll have a strength coach. So those four positions are kind of lock, stock, and barrel at most places. A chief of staff is a new title. Director of scouting and analytics, like I said, that's kind of situation dependent, like at Alabama and North Texas, for example. Like those guys have like spoken at analytics conferences. Like they're doing like big data cuts and kind of culling. Some programs use it as a way to stash another assistant coach. It really kind of depends on where you are and what kind of the delineation of responsibilities are. Scouting coordinators exist at some places and others not. But I think the bigger deal is that those guys, you know, also sort of serve as recruiting coordinators, you know, managing who's on campus, managing contacts. You know, they sort of backstop, you know, and do the kind of nitty gritty work to make sure that all that, you know, recruiting is sort of humming along. So, I think the bigger deal here is that they've committed basically four new spots, and they've imported two guys who have assistant coaching experience. And, you know, I think the structure of the staff here, we'll have to wait and see how it sort of functions. But, you know, we had talked in the last couple of years about, you know, it would probably behoove Missouri to bring in some more people with scouting experience, to bring in some people to, you know, bolster analytics or recruiting work. And they've done that. You know, this, we'll have to wait and see what the salary lines are here. But if you gave each of these guys, you know, at least $100,000, you probably are going to go into the mid 1.5s for, you know, staff budget. That's far and away higher than what Konzo Martin and Cam Anderson had at their disposal. You know, this is the kind of investment I think you and I have talked about wanting to see the program make, not necessarily paying, you know, exorbitant salaries to all assistants. You know, Charlton Young's still getting a hefty paycheck, but really investing kind of in the back of the house staff. You know, the guys who are going to sort of do all the work to sort of, you know, tee up recruiting, to make sure that scouting's, you know, at a high level. Just the next level sort of organization and development work that, you know, really I think almost sort of rivals, you know, what you see for some NBA organization. So it's a, just seeing the scale that they're working with now, it has to be heartening, because it's a that doesn't happen without a commitment of resources. And it's a commitment that, you know, I think you and I have, you know, been waiting to see for a while. So we'll have to see how the sort of roles flesh themselves out. But just the fact that they're bringing in these kinds of people and, you know, creating these kinds of spaces for them to operate is heartening, I think, for anybody who wants to see the program sort of, I think, catch up to some other SEC programs and other top end high majors.
Yeah. I think the word that we've often talked about is the level of commitment that Missouri has. And this is a big step. So for me, it's just like, you know, who the head coach is really immaterial to this, because previously, Missouri has been reluctant to kind of show the commitment that we sort of felt they needed if they wanted to compete in the way that other, I guess, non-traditional basketball schools that are competing now have already shown. And you know, like, it's something that we've been talking about and writing about for years. So it's very heartening for me, especially to sort of see the, you know, and again, we don't know exactly what the numbers are, but I think your sort of estimates are safe. Like I would be surprised if everybody out here was making like 40 grand, like, you know, chances are if the median ends up being about 100K, like that seems about right. And if that's the case, then Missouri has done what we've basically been asking them to do, which is to show that they're committed, that they're willing to invest to the level that is needed these days in order to compete. So yeah, like if you're paying CY 600K, you're paying him 600K because he's proven that he's able to land the kind of talent that you need to succeed. You don't need to pay your head coach, you know, $7-8 million a year, because chances are you're not hiring somebody like John Calipari or Mike Krzyzewski. Like, those guys earn that money. You know, Eric Musselman just signed a contract. What's he going to make? $5 million now?
Yep.
Like, you don't need to have a coach that makes $5 million to compete with a coach that makes $5 million, because the margin between, you know, being a $5 million coach and not is not that great. And it comes down to, okay, so what can we do to sort of fill in the gaps? We're, you know, they have Dennis Gates. Maybe Dennis Gates turns into somebody like, you know, Eric Musselman has done as far as level of success. You know, that's how those guys go and get paid is, you know, shoot, like 2 years ago, what was it Eric Musselman making?
285.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I think what Dennis is at 2.5.
Yeah.
So basically, yeah.
We had talked about basically what they've done here is that $1.5 million that you're not paying, like the median salary now is probably like closer to $4 million for some high major coaches. They've reallocated that part of that $1.5 million to equip Dennis Gates with the kind of support staff that's going to help elevate this program, or that could potentially elevate the program. You didn't need to go, you could go spend $4 million, $5 million to hire Kevin Willard, or you could try and do what Missouri's done here, which is hire a guy who's shown a lot of potential and give him the resources to go hire Charlton Young. You know, if you look at this staff, Dickie Nutt was a head coach. Kyle Smith-Peters was a head coach. Michael Fly has been a head coach. There are guys on this staff that have, you know, been in, you know, Charlton Young was head coach. He's got former head coaches on this staff. He's got guys who he trusts who have, you know, worked with him or worked at Florida State, who have been with him and helped execute a rebuild at Cleveland State. We'll see how that works here. You know, there are a lot of familiar names and guys that he clearly, you know, trusts to do the job. But, you know, even if this, you know, regime, for lack of a better term, doesn't work, you hope that what Missouri's done here is a permanent thing. That this is a permanent mentality of, okay, we're going to, you know, fund 6 to 8 off-court positions. We're going to give our head coach every opportunity to maximize their potential. And that's what they've done here. It feels as if there's been a realization looking around the rest of the SEC of we're behind. And if we're going to really do this, we have to commit. And to be fair, they did the same thing for Eli Drinkwitz. You know, they came in and Eli got, you know, plenty of money to help go build a staff. So if that's where the administration is now, you know, where it's just a default, we have to give our coach, you know, a baseline level of support comparable to our peers, that's a step forward. Late, but an important step that they've made.
Yeah, I'm excited. you know, mainly for all the, you know, the writing and the, all, you know, the breakdowns of budgets, just to see, like, you know, a staff that looks like it's ready to, you know, to compete in the SEC. And, you know, obviously there's still a lot of work needs to be done. You know, and we'll talk in future podcasts about, like, what kind of players, you know, they're going to be able to bring in. You know, clearly, I think right now, you know, Gates is trying to sort of build out this roster in a way that he thinks he can maybe patch over a few holes that, you know, that they can still be competitive without maybe, you know, yet having all the high-end talent. You know, but certainly, you know, having qualified coaches, having a deep bench is certainly going to help put Missouri in a better light in the coaching community. Because I know, like, you know, the view was long held that Missouri was a good job, but not a great job. And
they were cheap.
And that level of investment. They were cheap. Like, always have said, like, there's a reason why Mike Anderson was looking around every offseason. He was trying to get Mike Alden to give him more money. And not just for his own pocketbook, but for his staff. You know, and like Rick Barnes is
got too deep
for,
got
like, go ahead.
He's got a too deep crew on the bench, and he uses his leverage every year to get him a 5 or 10% pay raise.
Yeah. So it's just like, if you look around and you watch other programs, if you're able to, you know, like, attend an on-site, you know, practice, like, if wherever you live, if there's an NCAA tournament, you know, game coming, you know, to your area, you know, make it out, try to make it out to one of those practices and just see the amount of, like, people that are like
in polos,
around,
not the head coaches.
Yeah. Around the players and, like, helping and doing all these things. Like, that's what happens at Tennessee. It's what happens at, like, Texas A&M. It's what happens at Auburn. And Matt, it's happened at Missouri. So, hopefully that means that better results are going to follow.
Yeah. We'll talk about it probably at a future date, but the build here, and, you know, I think the one thing that sort of stuck out to me was, it was deflating, I think, for folks, obviously, to see Jamarion Sharp stay put. You know, I think, you know, the whispers around, you know, was Adam Miller really a viable guy? You know, seeing, you know, that, no, it was going to be TCU, LSU took some more air out of the balloon. This has been a solid build. Like, I think is it perfect? No. Like, can you look at this roster and go, oh yeah, there's some spots that need patching. But, you know, I think the one thing I wanted to see more than anything else was, what was this process going to look like? You know, what process, you know, was Dennis Gates going to use when it was just him early on? And as he started to onboard people, what was this sort of retrofitting going to look like? And, you know, I know people will probably, you know, say that we're, you know, setting expectations too low by saying that, you know, winning 15 or 16 games next year is progress. But, you know, just by building a roster that has a coherent plan with pieces that fit, Missouri will probably, what, win 3 or 4 more games just by having a logical sort of roster with some real thought and intention behind it. I, you know, I think that's not a swipe at Konzo Martin, but the vision he laid out didn't materialize in the roster he assembled. It just didn't match at all. You know, when you put on the tape of the guys he brought in and what he was asking them to do, just were fundamentally at odds. You know, I've spent the last month watching way too much tape of these guys that they're bringing in. They kind of fit what Dennis Gates tells you he wants to do and what he did at Cleveland State. And 16 wins doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, if this team gets it right and they get to 17-18, you know, that's a great first year, you know, for completely gutting the roster and rebooting. So I think that's what's been heartening, is to see that they've really, I think, followed what seems to be a pretty sound process for putting this roster together. Even if folks, you know, are disappointed that it's not going to be, you know, a team that's going to go from bottom of the SEC standings to a potential NCAA tournament bid in 1 year. I think they've done a lot of really good legwork so far.
Yeah, and if you're talking about, like the long term build, I like the approach, and I think if what you're really wanting to do here is reestablish Missouri as like a good brand, you know, like to make sure like the kids that, you know, are being offered in, you know, 2025, by the time they're ready to make their college decision, you know, they've seen that the program has risen, you know, from kind of the depths that it's seen in, you know, the last 10 years or so. So, it's all positive steps. I don't know that there's anything else that you and I needed to talk about in this pod.
Nope.
Like, it seems weird. There hasn't really been a whole lot of news. Obviously, the coaching staff being solidified, that's big news. Martin Sharp is big news. Outside of that, it's been pretty quiet. And even our little Slack
right
combo with our friend Matt Watkins has been pretty quiet, too. Just not a lot to talk about. So hopefully, if nothing else materializes, like recruiting with the 2022 class over the next couple of weeks, I think we'll probably just start looking into some of the discussion of who they're offering, you know, guys who are at least talking about coming onto campus, because I think they've sort of reached out to some 23 kids who are certainly intriguing. And I know fans will like it because some of them have the right number of stars next to their name. So we'll talk about some of those guys if nothing else has happened in a couple of weeks. What do you think?
I got to catch up on film, I guess. It's been nice not having to chew clips and to chew through full games for the last 10 days or so for a while.
Well, and how much Jamarian Sharp did you watch only to basically have it not matter?
I watched 8 full games.
Woo!
8 full games. Thankfully, there are YouTube channels out there. There are YouTubers out there now who will just cut all the commercials. Like, they will cut a 2:15 broadcast down to like 56 minutes. And if you have like stat broadcast up, you can basically just figure out when a guy subs in and subs out. So you will probably only watch like 35 minutes of actual tape. You can chew through 3 games in about an hour and a half. So it's possible. Like, there are people out there who are just as sadistic and masochistic as I am and will chop these things down. But yeah, no, there's 8 games and probably 120 clips that went out the window as a result of Jamarian staying put. But I'm not mad at Jamarian. I'm not mad at him. As I said earlier, I'm happy for him in Western Kentucky. So, that's the level of overwork I subject myself to.
And there's a big question in the CUSA next year is whether or not, Western Kentucky can take down the powerhouse that our boy AK is building in Birmingham.
This is an AK hive. We always stand. We stand for, we don't stand for Stan. We stand for AK.
Yeah.
Some of us stand for Grant McCaslin, but this is an AK hive too.
I feel like we've gotten Watkins on the R side with the AK stuff. I think he's always going to be a McCaslin guy, but sorry, McCaslin. That's the St. Louis to me, McCausland Avenue.
You can't get rid of it. But but no, we'll dive into the 2023s over the next couple of weeks. There, by then the list will probably have doubled. These guys are firing out basically 2 offers a day at this point. We wondered how quickly they would build the board out, and they have not. They've not hesitated. They are working quickly. This new large staff is quickly building recruiting boards. So I'll be eager to get into some of that tape over the next couple of weeks.
Well, cool. With that being said, I want to say thank you for tuning in. If you like this, you should probably make sure you are subscribed to the podcast feed wherever you download or listen to your podcast. For me, it's Apple Podcasts, but if you're a Google guy, the Google Play Store, I think you can find them there. Spotify, I think it works there too. If you're subscribed, all these episodes get beamed along with Before the Box Score directly into your phone. You can listen to Nate and DK dissect all there is to know about Mizzou football. You probably also enjoy reading more over at the flagship rocketnation.com. You can always do the Twitter thing. Give Matt a follow at MattJHarris85. You can follow me if you like at Sam P. Snelling. All complaints go to Levi. Levi, thanks for cutting this together. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Hopefully we'll have more stuff to talk about, including some recruiting 2022 action. Special action. So until then, thanks for tuning in. Have a good 2 weeks.